Okay, Sports City, we're having a little technical difficulty. I don't know what's going on up in here, Blog Talk, but welcome to the cookout. I got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with your boy and the rest of the crew around this kitchen. A lot of stuff to jump into, but Sports City, I'm going to change this up a little bit. You know this is the cookout. You know, whatever they call in and bring to the table, we will dice this up, throw this on the grill as best as we can. But almost everything that I'm going to get into today, I got debates all day, so I'm bringing the fire with me. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the kitchen timeless is alive.
I thought I'd be caught in this life, let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up. Wait until the sun goes down, we gon' make this bitch light up. Even when the sun goes down, I'ma make it go.
Ow, hoes turning heads like owls. I'm the man of the ow. Triple entendre, don't even ask me how. Con Edison blowing connected to a high power. Y'all can miss me with the money talk. The smart money's on hold, fuck what the dummies talk. I don't do too much blogging. I just run the town, I don't do too much jogging. The summer's off, the winter too. Top down in the winter, that's what winners do. And to these niggas, I'm like Windows 7. You let them tell it, they swear, cause they invented you. And since no good deed go unpunished, I'm not as cool with niggas as I once was. I once was cool as the funds was. But these bright lights turn me to a monster. Sorry, mama, I promise you wouldn't kill me, but I would've went insane had I remained the same me. Fuck me, bitch, it's true. All I got is this money.
Who would've thought I'd be caught in this life? Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up.
The call-in number is 917-889-9592. Like I said, you got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And like I said, I got a whole bunch of debate stuff. I know we are in the month of August. And, of course, baseball is starting to crack down to this final stretch for positioning for the postseason. But I know, everybody around the kitchen can't wait to get to that pigskin talk. So I've got some on slate. So the ones that I do have on slate, at least coming from me, I hope some people call in with topics so I can calm myself down, because everything I got is debate worthy. I want to see how people feel. If you feel some type of way, you can't take the heat. They already know what they can do. I got my big brother here already calling out of the state of Indiana. You guys know him as Arkeezy, a.k.a. Mr. King. Royce, welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling good, Thomas. What's good?
Not too much, man. Got a lot on slate, a lot on the plate, and a lot on my mind as well. And the fact of the matter is, the one issue that I got on mine, I'm going to say it because I've been chilling. I haven't been saying any names doing this out of the third. But ESPN, I salute you because you picked up somebody from Sports City. So I like it. I like what you guys are doing. Alan Fisher and Carolyn Fisher on the Army Champions show, they got something going on with ESPN. So people stay tuned. They'll be gone by the end of the year on another venture with ESPN. So I'm proud that something big is happening with Sports City. They've been listening. They haven't been listening. So this is great. I'm a little happy about that, but I see what's going on, ESPN. I see what's going on. So, Roy, you are the caller right now. I think, cookout, before I start divvying into the stuff that I have, anything that you would like to address on the grill so we can actually get at this as best as possible?
Not really, man. I kind of came in to support, you know, see what's going on, what's cracking. You know, me, I just got finished wrapping up some things, you know, over on the Royce Report, you know, talking a little fantasy hoops. But it's like the latest news in terms of NBA conversation. And again, I know it's baseball and NFL season about to kick off. But Dante Exum appears to have suffered some kind of knee injury with no contact. So, you know, anytime a guy is driving to the lane and comes to that jump stop and, you know, looks to elevate and then all of a sudden starts to flail in the air, you realize that something has occurred and it could be, you know, damaging long term. So, you know, speculation obviously early on is going to be something to the ACL, given the fact that it was a non-contact injury. But we saw Kyrie Irving go down with a non-contact injury, and it wasn't a ligament or tendon damage. It actually happened to be his kneecap. So there's no further reports right now. Don't know exactly what's going on with Dante Exum. But, you know, that was what was on my mind in terms of a conversation to, you know, something to just throw out there on the grill, man, and what that might mean for the Utah Jazz going forward, and in particular, Trey Burke, who kind of like yielded and gave up the starting spot for a number of games last season to Dante Exum and his youthful potential.
Now, here goes the interesting situation about Dante's injury, if you will. Now, I'm actually going to kind of join, and I hate to do this, but I have to, kind of join 2 years back-to-back on interesting situations in his international basketball scheme of things. Now, this happened while he was playing for the Australian team, and more or less, you had a situation that happened last season with Paul George in an exhibition game. Now, mind you, they were Australia was playing against Slovakia or Slovenia. I think it's Slovakia, if I'm not mistaken. However, he got injured in Slovenia. I'm sorry. He got injured or taking a jump shot, and when he landed, his knee kind of gave out underneath him. Now, here's an interesting situation where this is basically that happened on his own will on the basketball floor, and you can't be quite careful. I mean, freakier stuff is going to happen on the field or on the floor, however, whatever scheme of things it is in the sport world. Now, you have an interesting name. I'm not going to call him a big-time name, but he's a decent point guard, so I can't take too much away from him. But then you had Paul George, like I said last season, in an exhibition game for the United States team, out for basically a good duration of the season. He should have been out for the entire season. That's just me because of how bad the compound fracture is. Now, looking at how much money is invested into these players and how these teams are trying to get stronger season after season, your thoughts on a lot of these players that are getting injured in games that aren't as significant as the NBA season. Now, I know they mean a lot. People would love to represent their country and bring a title or a medal back to their respective country. But in some situation, they have to further investigate and see if this is, you know, extreme damage or if this is something that he could come back from. But just like you said, this actually opens the door pretty wide for Trey Burke to basically step up and be the point guard that a lot of people wanted him to be coming from the University of Michigan. But looking at Exum's injury, just like I said, comparable to Paul George, well, they start to look at this closely in the international scheme of things while these guys are playing outside of the NBA.
Well, you know, I'll start with Dante Exum. I mean, at 6'6", 190 pounds, I mean, young player last season, only really 20 years old. I just thought the Utah Jazz as an organization was enamored with what they saw Philadelphia do with, like, Michael Carter-Williams being a 6'6", you know, 190 pounds or so, you know, another one of those big point guards, somebody who pretty much to set the table for his teammates, get in the paint, but not really, you know, having a knockdown jump shot, but capable, obviously, of trying to keep teams, you know, pretty much a little honest in terms of coverage. Dante Exum, and this is the worst thing that could have really probably happened for his young career at this point, in my opinion, because he didn't really impress. Whatever was going on in Utah, for whatever the reason, they chose to start him over Trey Burke, and I actually kind of know the reason to some degree, at least my own reason why. He didn't really impress. I mean, you're a young team. You want to get guys game experience in the NBA for your club because they're under an NBA contract. Now, the difference, I guess, if you're playing for Team Australia, well, I guess there's no real contract involved for payment. You're representing your country voluntarily, but I still think for health reasons, the country, you know, the Australian team should have some kind of, insurance and things of that nature. So when a player under NBA contract is on the national team and he suffers this type of injury, the NBA isn't per se just out of player and cash in that sense. But, you know, what it means for him on the court is if it happens to be an ACL, you're talking about 6 to 9 months recovery. It just depends on, you know, how well he heals and rehabilitates himself and the type of tear, whether it's partial, a complete tear, things of that nature, all that has, you know, bearings on, you know, the rehabilitation time period. So don't really want to speculate per se that it's, you know, it just has to be some kind of ligament or tendon damage. You know, it's early in the reports, but he's probably not going to be ready for training camp. That's where it has an immediate impact on one Trey Burke, who, again, it's funny, Ty, that, you know, this is the conversation because I just talked about this guy earlier today in terms of, you know, his fantasy outlook and the fact that over the last couple seasons, I mean, Trey Burke has just been horrendous across the board when it comes to shooting and his shooting percentages. His field goals has dipped, his percentages dipped, his three-point percentages dipped, his free throw percentage. Oh, my God, how do you go from 90% free throw shooting to 75% and you're not increasing your attempts? That's ridiculous. That means you just had a horrible year shooting the ball, period, from anywhere, 15 feet and beyond. So that being said, it's his third season. It's unfortunate that Dante Exum is going to miss time for the Utah Jazz, but Trey Burke has to answer the bell. He's got to step up and respond immediately and do something to help this Utah Jazz ball club, or it's going to be a major setback for them in terms of somebody who could really lead that team from that position, unless you're going to ask, you know, you bring another name into the conversation, Alec Burks, who missed time last year with a shoulder injury. He's capable of playing some point guard and shooting guard, but they want him to be more of the shooting guard option. So Utah Jazz right now really have to figure out, first and foremost, what is going on with the health of Dante Exum so they can adjust their plan accordingly going forward.
Now, you know, looking at the situation with Exum, and I can't wait to hear more about the report to see how, you know, extreme the injury is. However, their situation at the two guard, because just like you said, they have him listed depth chart-wise as a shooting guard, but notably a lot of people think he can handle the ball, and Trey Burke is one of those guys that can handle the ball but shoot, but he hasn't really have filled up the stat column, if you will. The guy that a lot of people are hoping that takes off is Rodney Hood. Now, having a situation like the Utah Jazz and Exum were available, or Alec Burks, both of these guys are more or less a combo guard that can handle the ball and try to start the offense up as best as possible. They didn't have no real big-time, you know, knockdown shooter at the two-guard position. So this does put a lot of pressure on a guy like Trey Burke coming out of college. I mean, this is going to be his, what, his second or third season fresh out of college and trying to shoulder the load out west with a Utah Jazz team that has bigs but don't really have an identity right now. And I think more or less the go-to guy in all of this is Gordon Hayward. I mean, they threw him a ton of money. He has big shot capability. He has done it. But I think everybody's going to have to step up and pitch in if this is a devious injury at the end of the day. But I do like what they have up front in their front court. But right now, considerably looking at Dante Exum go down and how a lot of question marks were around Trey Burke, if he's ready up until this point, now Trey Burke is basically a all-else-or-bust situation, or they're going to have to play patchwork dealing with this Utah Jazz roster. But like I said, Rodney Hood is one of the guys that I think that could actually be an impact at the two-guard position.
I'd agree with you, Thomas. You know, that front court is pretty much, you know, rock solid right now for the Utah Jazz. When you talk and begin with Gordon Hayward at the small forward position, Derek Favors at power forward, Rudy Gobert at center, I mean, just in terms of the starters, you're good to go. Those guys are, for the most part, regularly healthy and available and, for the most part, consistent. And they still have room to grow in their games. but it's the backcourt. It's to Trey Burke. It's Dante Exum, his health. Trey Burke's, you know, lack of consistency in terms of his shooting from the outside, Alec Burke's health, and Rodney Hood's health and consistency. You mentioned Rodney Hood, a guy that I like to watch play. I like to see him shoot the ball, especially from deep. He can get hot in a jiffy. And, you know, he's a lefty, but he battled a lot of injuries in his rookie campaign last season. So he's got to be healthy, and he's got to continue to provide some consistency. Now, if Dante Exum has, as you alluded to, a potentially, you know, severe injury to his knee, then now Alec Burks goes into a timeshare. Now his minutes will probably be divided up at the point guard as well as the two, which means things open up. There's more minutes available for Rodney Hood at the shooting guard, and he could be the primary backup to Gordon Hayward. So now he's playing two positions and still finding a way probably to get close to 32 minutes a night. But that backcourt has to stay healthy, and it has to be consistency from them in terms of their guard play and shooting the basketball. And it's a make-or-miss league. And right now, Dante Exum, Trey Burke, they just miss too often, okay? When you're shooting 38 to 36% from the field, you're just missing too many shots. But what you get with Alec Burks and Rodney Hood could potentially be the most reliable backcourt options. Maybe you go Burke at the point and Hood at the two, and see what that lineup gives you in terms of results for the Utah Jazz, you know, looking to, you know, get back into the postseason play out West. And you know that West is tough.
Exactly. That's what I'm concerned about. Now, this is what I wanted to say. Do you think they can still stay safe while they're dealing with an impact injury like this in their backcourt? And be quite competitive out West? I don't want to just say, are they going to be a top 18? I mean, anything can happen. But, I mean, let's just put them in the spectacle of being competitive in a loaded Western Conference. I mean, it is not safe, at least from 1 to 12. All 12 teams are deadly. Let me get it right. Kobe Bryant laughed at the fact that he said the Lakers would be 12. You know what I mean? Last season, because it was just him and no other big-time name. He went down again, and guess what happened to the Lakers? They were 12. So, this can happen. This is something that they're going to have to watch out for with the injury happening right now. Can they stay face and be competitive, or do you think they'd be on the bottom of the barrel looking up in this Western Conference, which is loaded like crazy?
Well, I think they're going to be competitive. If I recall correctly, I mean, they were the hottest team, I want to say, after January. It wasn't even the All-Star break. Like, I think it was goes back to January. I'm sure there's a listener out there who has the opportunity to, you know, just to check the stats, just to see how they did in terms of wins and losses from January through the remainder of the regular season. But it was how they got started. They didn't get off to a great start, and they dug themselves a hole, and they couldn't get out of it. So it's about how you begin. They've got to come out of the blocks ready to go, okay? I mean, they got to hit their stride and keep pressing. And that oftentimes means health. You've got to be healthy. You got to have chemistry. They don't have a lot of new pieces. I mean, you got the rookie Trey Lyles, but that's depth in the front court. They have – you know, they brought over another foreign player, Tabor Police, who was a few years ago timeless. You may remember the name. He was drafted by the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I thought he was going to stay there and do something, but they gave up his rights. Now he's in Utah. And then you just got, you know, a few no-name guys, like I said, in that backcourt. So are they capable? Yes. I think they figured something out down, you know, the backstretch of the season from January through April, to be a tough team, to be competitive, and that was without Alec Burks on the floor. So Alec has to step in right away, be productive, because I'm just going to, you know, make what I feel like is a safe assumption. Dante Exum is not going to be ready to go when the season tips off in late October, November, early November. He's just not going to be ready. He's going to be coming out of a rehab. or still in the midst of a rehabilitation process. So Trey Burke, Alec Burks, Rodney Hood must hold down the fort in the backcourt. And like I said, you got to make shots. But the landscape of everyone else, this is a young team. They're not fearful, Timeless, of some of those teams that have a larger fan base, maybe, if you will, or are sexier conversations for sports talk radio. But the Utah Jazz are a legitimate, young, up-and-coming team with guys who like to play together, and they work hard, and they get it done. They just lack some major experience in key positions last season. That's what it is. They lack experience in that point guard spot. And you know it. We talk about Russell. We talk about Chris Paul. We talk Mike Conley. We talk Damian Lillard. We talk Steph Curry, James Harden. Now they got Ty Lawson running with him over in Houston. I mean, you got point guards who get it done. If you want to talk Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight and all that in Phoenix. I mean, these guys are going at you night after night after night. There are no nights off for the point guard in the NBA. You got a tough cover every night. So not only do you have to defend the position well, you got to make him work on the defensive end by being able to get some kind of buckets. And that's, again, Trey Burke, too many missed shots from the perimeter that give guys the opportunity to go under on pick and roll. So what? You can shoot the three. On paper, it sounds like you might hit, but if the numbers say you're 31%, well, I don't got to be up on you like I might have to be up on Chris Paul, who's a career 40% three-point shooter. So that's what they got to do in Utah, Todd.
And looking at the team right now, the one with the most experience is Gordon Hayward. And, you know, that's the guy that he's the money man of the team. And I don't even want to look at the funds that he's receiving. I'm going to look at the experience that we just hit on. He still has work to do, too. I don't feel like he's a finished product yet also. I mean, he can score. He can get you 20 points a game. He might slide you a good 6 to 7 rebounds if that is possible. But his hands are full because he's at the small forward position dealing with a lot of big names, i.e. Kevin Durant, i.e. LeBron James, i.e. Carmelo. I mean, all of the critical players across the league are going to be in his face. He has that defensive responsibility of slowing those guys down. So all of these guys are going to have to step up off the fly. I think they will be competitive, especially with the Eiffel Tower being Rudy Gobert in the midst of the paint. But I think their hands are full, especially dealing with this injury right now, at least 2 or 3 months before the season gets started. This is definitely critical for the Utah Jazz. I think they'll be on the the bottom of the barrel, but they definitely be a tough game in and game out because they got motivated guys on the team in it. And one name that you hit on with Grant Jarrett, I'm not sold on his name, especially for the 3 or 4 games that he did get to go in. He went in, garbage time, and all he wanted to do was shoot 3-point shots. He's on the outside looking in. And to me, I don't even think he's a power forward. He's more of a 3 to me, but they have him listed as a 4. But other than that, I think the Utah Jazz are in a tough situation. And just like I said, this is something that the Pacers need to watch out for with Paul George. And everybody's expecting Paul George to have a clear offseason right now. But I bet you he's still jumping around gingerly, making sure that he doesn't land awkwardly on his, compound fracture from just a season and a half ago. So that this is something that needs to be watched or considered moving forward. Anything else as we move on?
That's all I have, son.
Okay, now, I wonder if you got any more NBA. I got one with the James Harden questionable situation with Adidas trying to throw him $200 million. Other than that, like I said, I have a ton of fire and debate city with me, especially NFL-wise. But if you want to kick into the beard, we can, until people start to pile in. If not, I can start rolling into some of these NFL topics as well. Do you want to talk about Jimmy Beard and seeing if he does jump into Adidas and leave Nike?
I mean, you're the host, man. We can talk about it. You know me. I'm not running from anything. I'm here.
Okay. Now let's go there. Let's go there with the Jimmy Beard situation before I start getting into the pigskin, because I got a lot of pigskin right now. Now, obviously enough, we just are a season away from what happened last year. where Under Armour had went at Kevin Durant and tried to throw Kevin Durant, I think it was $235 to $250 million. He almost jumped at it. He backtracked, went back to Nike. Nike ended up, you know, appeasing what he wanted on the deal. Steph Curry ends up being the guy for Under Armour, and everybody knows how that story ended. Ended up running into a championship and winning one. Now we have James Harden, a Nike representative, and Adidas trying to make a play at Jimmy Beard and trying to throw him a $200 million contract. Now, one, I won't take away from saying Harden doesn't have the capability to have a similar season that what Steph Curry had this season, but two, does this put pressure on Harden to leave, or do you think Harden will stick around with Nike and make it happen where he is right now, especially with everything that's going on with Houston? Houston is a young team right now on the rise with a lot of interesting moves and pieces as of this past offseason.
Well, that's simple. In my opinion, it's an easy answer because there's nothing for James Harden to do but posture and position himself to appear as if he's signing with Adidas. You know, just get it out there. Look, this is the offer from Adidas. You know, you guys are going to need to match it if you want me to stay or I'm rolling. Why? This is sneakers, right? Now, if they can come up with a sneaker that he's comfortable wearing, I'm sure he has no problem. I mean, it's not – maybe it is that big of a deal to some people, but to me, it's not that big of a deal if you're wearing – Nike, Adidas, and hell, maybe even Under Armour at this point. But we know Nike owns 90% of the market, right? Adidas, I think, is coming in at about, like, what, 5%? Well, Adidas needs a name that can move shoes. That's all. Or maybe they just want to increase Nike's payroll and try to compete, you know, strategically, you know, for some other reason from that vantage point. But everybody, man, who's anybody that's a star or superstar for the most part is running with Nike. And we know that. And when you talk Adidas sneakers, yeah, like, what's the signature shoe? Like, who is that guy? Who comes to mind? And has, like, a major following, has major, major fans. I mean, the whole Derrick Rose thing just hasn't really panned out, okay?
Right.
The Derrick Rose conversation keeps, you know, resulting in a conversation that's associated with injury. So, you know, whatever he was supposed to be after being, you know, the youngest MVP ever in the league, come on. It's gone nowhere. It's a constant recovery campaign. John Wall, now I still remember when John Wall was with Reebok. So, you know, I have to keep reminding myself that he's supposedly with Adidas. You can't go with a big man, you know, the Tim Duncan and the Dwight Howards and the Josh Smith guys. Like, they're on Adidas. You got Damian Lillard. But unless, you know, you're going to throw a major, major campaign at Damian Lillard, man, he's probably not going to be league MVP anytime soon, but he could have a ridiculous year this upcoming season, seeing how all the help that he once had is no longer there. The reason you go after a guy like James Harden at this point right now, in my opinion, Thomas, is he didn't win the NBA league MVP, but he did receive the coveted NBA Players Award. The players saw him as the league MVP. And that was, and, you know, this past season, you know, run for MVP between Steph Curry and James Harden, it was one of those years you could have easily had co-MVPs, in my opinion. It was that close from start to finish. And that's what Adidas is trying to, you know, capitalize on. Get an MVP guy on their roster and pushing, because he also has, you know, swagger off the court. Everyone recognizes and knows who the beard is, the bearded one. You know, he's fashionable, he's stylish. I mean, he's got some commercials and endorsements via other products that are out there. So why not go after him? Because he's available. You might just swing him. You might just swing him. So you got to swing for the fences right now if you're Adidas. You have nothing to lose given the fact that you've already lost. When you look at the numbers on the board, 90-5 game is already over. So why not shoot some threes?
Yeah. I agree. And just like you said, you know, trying to go after some MVP caliber guys, let's just look at it. Last year's MVP, Steph Curry, is in Under Armour. The year before that, Kevin Durant is in Nike. The year before Kevin Durant, LeBron James is in Nike as well. Adidas is the only one that's missing from this situation, and Harden was in the discussion. Them to throw him $200 million to wear Nike wear, whether it's the shoes, if he puts on an armband or whatever have you, that's more promotion than the endorsement that he picks up. And I think he is marketable out of Houston because, you know, other than him, I mean, you'll have to think of big names on the football team being a Houston Texan with like J.J. Watt or potentially another name that I'll be touching on later in Arian Foster. But other than that, I think that in that market alone, Houston being one of the bigger cities, one of the biggest, let me get it right, one of the biggest cities in America to get kids to follow him and wear Reebok at the game and, wear Adidas at the game, be big and be a player in this situation. But that's if Harden does make the move, but this is a deal that is on the table for James Harden moving forward. And I don't know. I think it's a no-brainer that Harden should go to Adidas and kind of have that shoe designed to the way that he likes it and makes it work. But just seeing that, you know, ideally Adidas is more or less known as a soccer shoe and a lot of players in the basketball league don't wear Adidas. I mean, you have a handful of them. They tried to market Adidas shoe, I think it was 2012, during that postseason run where they had a shoe for each team that was in the playoffs. And in different color schemes, so on and so forth, what have you. But I think they need a big name, marketably so, to help get Adidas back in the running up against the Nike situation, up against the Jordan brand, and also now a new player with Under Armour, especially with the run that Steph Curry's on to. You know, a lot of people are going to buy those, you know, those hot yellow and blue shoes. So just knowing that it's a red and black situation, that'll be a scheme that a lot of teams could wear. There's a couple of teams in the league that wear red and black, and knowing that Damian Lillard is one of the names that wears red and black for Adidas, and also just like you said, Derrick Rose as well wears red and black, but he hasn't even been out there on the floor really. I think they're taking an interesting shot, to say the least, about James Harden trying to make the move, but I did want to get that one out there. Anything else that you'd like to address as we move forward?
I mean, just really quickly, Thomas, you pointed it out, but the real conversation here, or maybe another way of really looking at this, is the Under Armour angle. Where's Under Armour in all of this? You know, because it's not even about Nike. Nike is already so far out front when it comes to Adidas and Under Armour. It's about who's going to come in second right now. We already know who's in first. Who's coming in second? And you just said it. Last season's MVP, Kevin Durant, was offered $235 million. From Under Armour, and he was gone. He was gone. Nike said, "Whoa, Kevin, hold up, buddy. We got your check. We got your check."
You're right.
So that would have been last season's MVP, or two seasons ago MVP. Then they would have followed up by securing Steph Curry, the past most immediate season league MVP. Could you imagine the landscape right now if Under Armour had Kevin Durant, Steph Curry? I'm waiting for Under Armour to come in with a bid for James Harden. Forget the Adidas conversation. Adidas is swinging to stay alive because Under Armour's on their heels. They're the ones that's coming for the number two spot.
And right now, Steph is the guy that's carrying the torch, especially after winning a championship as soon as he signed the dotted line for Under Armour. So if they are to pick a guy like James Harden, I think this will definitely, no doubt, put them in second place on shoe marketability or just sportwear alone in the basketball game with Steph and James Harden. Notably, one is the MVP now, reigning, and the other was the runner-up. So if Under Armour could get into this, that'll be a whole nother interesting situation. But I know it's more or less a fight between Nike and Adidas. And the interesting thing about Nike is they have a ton of players that are under that Nike umbrella that seem satisfied. So I don't know if Harden leaves. It would be interesting if he does stay, because $200 million to leave on the table when, for a shoe deal is heavy.
Right.
It is extremely heavy. I think that's a no-brainer to me, especially if it was me. I'd be at the Adidas headquarters telling me, how many times do you want me to sign Tyrone Powell? Because I'll show you every nick and cranny on how to sign his name. Okay. that's just me. I'm sorry. Anything else that you have toward the Harden deal of $200 million on the table for a shoe deal?
Nah, that's it, brother. You know, let's get this hut hike on, man. Throw that pigskin around.
Okay. So, like I said, I got a lot of debate on my chest. So, people in Sports City, y'all going to have to deal with me, because I got into a lot of stuff as of this current day of August 4th. And this was at work, you know what I'm saying? And I said, you know what? These would be some interesting dishes to bring up in the kitchen. So, I'm not playing, y'all. I am not playing. Okay, so the interesting thing I want to talk about right now, I'm going to set this one off, is the NFC South, right? And the NFC South was brought up at my job, I'm not going to lie, on how terrible the division was last year, where all of the teams in the division were heavily under 500. That was the Atlanta Falcons, that was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that was the New Orleans Saints, and the Carolina Panthers. The Carolina Panthers ended up making the postseason with a 6-win, 9-loss, and 1-tie record. Wait. I don't know if y'all heard me. 6 wins, 9 losses, and 1-tie. Okay? So now the interesting thing is people were like, well, the NFC South is going to be something to watch. And I'm like, yeah, they are going to be something to watch. And this is what got people mad. And I said, I'm bringing the fire here. One, I talked about this throughout the kitchen for the past week or so. The New Orleans Saints, you're going to have to prove me wrong. You are the bottom of the division. I'm sorry. I got to let it go. So let's go. How in the hell do you sit up there and get rid of Jimmy Graham? You already watched Devery Henderson go. You already watched Lance Moore go. So now it's more or less Marcus Colston, Brandon Cooks, and trying to outrun everybody or throw jump balls. This is the type of offense that you got right now for Drew Brees. And they have an interesting running game with Robinson. Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't know if he's a home run hitter every time he touches the ball, but this is going to be interesting. So I think, to me, right now, I'm jumping the gun. It is August. It's early. You guys damaged Drew Brees, at least for this season right now. You got rid of his best target. His best. You get rid of a 6'8 tight end? That's a touchdown machine. Okay. So interesting enough, we have the Atlanta Falcons. We also have the Carolina Panthers in the midst of this thing. And I'm doing this quite specifically. Let's go with the Carolina Panthers. They get rid of one of the faces of the organization, Steve Smith, just a season ago. They also get Calvin Benjamin out of the draft from Florida State. Cam Newton is Cam Newton. Everybody knows him as Superman. They watch D'Angelo Williams go to Pittsburgh. Now it's more or less the Jonathan Stewart show, unless otherwise directed, or Tolbert as well, right? Right, they still have Olsen in the tight end position. And the question mark is how does defense survive with just Luke Kuechly and watching Greg Hardy go to the Dallas Cowboys? Interesting enough, right? Especially like I started this topic off, they went 6-9-1. So they still have that bitter taste of losing in their mouth. Now, mind you, they won that first round game up against the Cardinals and went to the second round, went up to Seattle and got slaughtered real bad, right? So I don't feel too great about the progression of the Panthers, because they're up and they're down one season. They're up and down the next season. So I don't know. They're on standby with me. But like I said, the stellar is still the same. So I want to figure out how this is going to go. Now the Atlanta Falcons and how they can stay healthy and Father Time at least tapping some interesting players on the team on the back. And the question mark is around their defense, but they did work in the draft and picking up notable players across the board defensively for this Atlanta Falcon team. But the one knock that I have toward this Atlanta Falcon team is their two household names at the wide receiver position in Julio and Roddy. If Roddy doesn't look like Father Time is tapping him on the shoulder, and the knock on Julio, I'm sorry, I know you're a monster at the wide receiver position. If you can stay healthy, because you are not on the field as much as that Falcon team needs you, and I'm actually kind of happy in saying it, because if they are. They're a tough offense to slow down, especially with Devin Hester in the midst of that also. But if they can stay healthy, I think the Falcons are a big-time player in a situation to be either a top two-seeded team in the NFC South. Now, the reason why I did that with those first three teams is, and I'm starting it, like I said, I'm bringing the fire here, Sports City. So the fact of the matter is, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right? They have a loaded defense. They have a very interesting offense, right? Right? How much are they there with me? And now they enter Jameis Winston into the door. So this is where the debate came, right? And people were like, well, all the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to do is get you like 3 to 5 wins. I said, why? Like, what's so wrong with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers not being a player in this upcoming season right now? So a lot of people that I was talking to do not believe in Jameis Winston. I said, okay, so you mean to tell me that this guy loses in the first collegiate playoff in history and he falls off the deep end? You mean to tell me that this guy won, what, 25, 26, 27 straight games in a row? He loses one, and now all of a sudden he's going to have a struggling situation where he didn't lose much in college. He didn't lose much in high school. So this is where I address the situation. I think Tampa Bay is going to make a hell of a lot of noise in the NFC South. Like I said, people I was talking to said they see 3 to 5 wins. I see 500 or better. 8-8 or better. Now, I'm not going to say, 10-6 or 11-5, but Jameis Winston, and I feel like throwing up because I'm giving Jameis Winston credit, and I'm a Hurricane fan. I'm a diehard Hurricane fan, and I do not like talking about the Seminoles at all. I won't be disrespectful because I'm not even close to September to start talking about college teams and our allegiance and so on and so forth. But I said, I think Jameis Winston could cause trouble because, look, his one season with a big target was Kelvin Benjamin. He went undefeated, won a national championship. Now, he has a receiver just as big as Kelvin Benjamin on one side of the field being Mike Evans. And on the other side of the field, he has a house that is known for going up top and making plays downfield in Vincent Jackson. So you mean to tell me that he has weapons on the outside? They can't really put 7 or 8 in the box on him to try to send him after him. They have to worry about what's going on out there. And he is a guy that moves the ball, moves the chains. I think Jameis can be dangerous. That's right. I am saying this right now here in Sports City. I'm saying that he can be dangerous. I'm saying 8-8 or better. I'm doing this in August right now. So Royce may be having technical difficulty. Just fell off. So Royce, if you are able to get back, I just seen that. Okay, so I do have another brother and chef in the building, Mr. Silver, a.k.a. Nacho. Welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
You know, I'm feeling great. I'm feeling good. It took a while to get me in. Real quick, I don't lace up a shoe for less than $300 million. Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, it's $200. It's $200 million, but I get your point. I get your point. Like I said, I will be at the Adidas headquarters trying to tie. I'll do it like Bart Simpson in the beginning of The Simpsons, trying to tie one pound. Talk more. Showing you Tyron Powell, Tyron Powell, Tyron Powell. Look, how many times until I jump off the window with the skateboard and skate home? But that's neither here nor there. So, like I said, I got a ton of debates. I got a ton of debates. So it's going to get hot in this kitchen, at least for the duration of this show. Your thoughts on what I was presented with and how I addressed the situation around Jameis Winston.
Well, first off, I think you're putting way too much onus on the New Orleans Saints. And sorry to go back to that was your first comment, I know. But just to say that they're automatically in the doghouse for losing one player, albeit one of the best catching tight ends in the NFL, receiving tight ends in the NFL. I just don't think that knocks them all the way down to the bottom of the division, that it only took six wins to win it. Now, back to the Jameis point. We discussed this a couple days ago, I believe, and I told you the same thing. I'm about to tell you right now, and I just don't think Jameis Winston is going to be the breakout superstar that everyone who wants to count college wins as automatic NFL wins. I don't think that just because he lost one college game, he's automatically going to translate to the NFL. He's going to get the speed down, and he's going to come in and break out and be an eight-game winner his first season. I do believe in the kid. That doesn't mean I don't believe in him. I do believe in him. It doesn't mean that I think he's a bum or I think he's not going to do well in his career. This is the NFL. I think we were spoiled with the RG3s, the Andrew Lucks, and these multitude of quarterbacks who came in year one and won games. Not necessarily eight games like you're stating, but won games, and you could see that the track was headed in a right direction right away. And that's where I put this team. I put them at six wins or maybe 5 to 6, at best 7 wins. I don't see them as a 500 team just yet. I would equate this and not saying that the talent level or the ceiling is the same between these two quarterbacks, but Geno Smith walked into what I would consider a similar situation in one of the better defenses. And, you know, a quarterback who a coach who does not like to stress the quarterback. He runs the ball, pounds the rock down the middle, and wrecks. So, and he didn't do very well transitioning to this game. And he's taking steps forward, and we can see the steady progression from Geno Smith. I think that's the same path Jameis Winston is on. I don't think that just because the only factor being wins in college making you a good quarterback or automatically making you translate to this game, a la Matt Leinart, a la Tim Tebow. I just don't understand that concept. Now, the reasoning I'm putting on a 5-6 wins is because I think the interceptions will still be there, and this isn't a college game where you can throw two, maybe three interceptions in a first half and go into halftime, make a game plan, and be okay. This is a league where one turnover can cost you a game. And I just think there's going to be a plethora from him, from the learning curve. But that'll be the learning curve we see. The progression will get better. We'll see him get better in his game. And the strides, I think, will be more so in years 2 to 3 than college to his rookie year. I don't think we'll see that giant leap or stride like we saw from an RG3 and Andrew Luck when they came into this league and took it by storm. Because what you're essentially saying, in a division that took 6 wins, this team is going to come in and automatically win the division at 8 or better and make the playoffs. I just don't see that happening here with Jameis Winston and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But I do see them getting, like I said, at 6, at best 7. And we will see this team on the rise, just not as fast as I don't think it'll be as fast as you think it is.
Okay, now, here's the interesting situation of Jameis's ordeal that you're speaking on in college. He lost a very interesting target in Kelvin Benjamin and still was getting the job done. And you're right, they would face deficits or face a little adversity, then come out and storm out there and get the win. And knowing that he's already dealt with adversity, knowing that he had a comeback trail of winning games, even though things didn't pan out up against Oregon, but he knows what it takes to go through moxie and crazy situations throughout a game. Now, I'm not sitting up here saying that, look, Tampa Bay is going to sit up here and they're going to the playoffs and yada, yada, yada. They have the possibility to do so. But I want it to all be on the shoulders of Jameis Winston. He would have to look beyond the quarterback. And just like I said, yeah, the quarterback is the very most important position on the field, right? Let's just say that, right? He did not have two guys that are over 6'3 on the outside. One is 6'5, one is 6'3 of Vincent Jackson. And both of these guys can run. Everybody's already seen what Evans did in his rookie season. He already had a game of over 230 yards receiving already as a rookie. So this is already letting you know the tip of the iceberg of what this guy presents at the receiver position. I think the one thing that Jameis Winston needs to happen right now is for his running backs to stay healthy, i.e. the muscle mouse, i.e. Doug Martin. If Doug Martin can stay out there and give him 14 or more games, I'm hoping he can give him all 16. This is a problem for a lot of teams in the NFL, let alone teams in that NFC South. Now, here's why I say we got to look past Jameis Winston, because that was the lone thing that was missing from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They did not have a quarterback. They got rid of Freeman. They put Glennon in the game. Glennon barely doing stuff. They were looking like they were going to go, winless for the season. They snuck a win in the middle of Pittsburgh, started losing games like crazy. had two wins near the end of the season, trying to do patchwork after patchwork situation to get a tight end and Tim Wright back from the Patriots, which they just lost the season before he went up there and got a championship. So you know that he brings that quality to the tight end position as well, knowing him and Seraphin will actually be, you know, fighting for a position at that tight end position. But this is what I'm looking past them. Don't forget about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. That front four is going to be a monster. Their front seven, actually, I can give credit to, and they already helped out that secondary also. So their defense, if Jameis could get these guys 20 to 24 points a game, they're going to be a problem to stop. That's all it really takes for Jameis to do is to get the ball scored three or four times, and Tampa Bay is in position to win games. They're in position to win games. Gerald McCoy has not had a season where he's really felt good about, you know, making plays defensively. Or Lavonte David. I mean, these guys are monsters and have been watching this team lose since they've been there. Now they have a quarterback that they get to high-five and feel happy about. I feel bad in saying this. They shouldn't even give him the rookie treatment. They need to go out there and treat him like he is the head of this team right now because he's motivational. He has that ego, which I think some quarterbacks do need to have. You don't want him to go in there and be at the edge of his seat. Next time he makes a mistake, it starts hanging his head. Jameis is not that guy. Jameis has dealt with games, just like you said, throw two, three, or four interceptions in a game. It's come back and win games. As long as he's in these games, I still feel like he's a problem. And at four to, well, the way they were selling it at the job, they were selling it 3 to 5 wins this season. I feel like people are highly doubting what this guy brings to the table. The comparisons to Tebow or other quarterbacks out there, Tebow can't throw the ball. Let's be real. Tebow cannot throw the ball. And Jameis Winston is similar to, and I hate to give this guy credit because I live here in the area, Eli Manning. Eli Manning will be happy with making a 6-yard to 11-yard completion and move the chains. He's content. You don't think about Jameis making a pass of over 30 yards unless it was Kelvin Benjamin. Now he has those receivers that he can go up top to and make that happen. The boy can throw. Like, let's not say he can't throw. The boy plays baseball. He pitched, so don't make it look like he can't get that ball out there. He's smart. His football IQ is crazy. He can scramble if he wants to. I mean, I'm not saying that he's a Michael Vick. He was, a 4.7, 40. I mean, and not to say that that means anything. I'm just saying that he can get out of harm's way and make plays happen. And I think Tampa Bay will make noise, and I'm saying it here right now. Like I said, I'm bringing fire to this cookout. I see better than 7 wins. I see 500. I see 500. I see 8-8. I do see it. I think that they're going to be a problem. I think that they could split through the division. That could already be 3. All they have to do is pick up 5 more wins in the season. If they get 3 in the division by splitting and get 5 wins, I don't feel like that's a reach. I really feel like that is an attainable goal for Jameis. If he does any better than 8-8, they're playoff bound. They're going to the playoffs if he does better than 8-8.
I don't understand how, you know, you can equate throwing 2 or 3 interceptions against the Duke or a Clemson and coming back when he's going to be playing a New Orleans Saints, a Carolina Panthers twice a year, the Falcons, NFL teams. I understand in college he was aha the greatest, but and he only lost one game, but all I hear is he's got moxie. He's not a down guy. He doesn't hang his head. What you're failing to explain is how every time he hones in on a receiver in a game, which he does every game, he throws multiple interceptions. And it's his game that needs to evolve. I just don't see it evolving from his college year to his rookie season in the NFL. I don't think the transition is that fast. I anticipate him being able to do that and win games and read defenses and do things like that, but that's not going to happen as fast. I think, like I said, we were spoiled with these past few first-round picks coming into the season and winning games. They're just, you know, head and shoulders above the other rookie classes that have just come in. And I think that we have to not put Jameis up into that and look at the crop that was against him and the fact that, like I said, there is a big difference to throw 1 or 2 interceptions in an NFL game. He was throwing sometimes 3 and 4 in college games and coming back. There's just no stance in that. I don't know if there is a record of that, if there's a recording of how many times a quarterback has thrown 2+ interceptions and have won that game. I guarantee you the list is really low. So that's where I'm getting at. I don't think that this guy is going to come in and not be a help. He will be a help, but I don't think he's going to be a 5 or 6 game help. He's not accountable for that just yet. I think in years to come, in 1 or 2, he'll definitely be the quarterback of this franchise, no, without a shadow of a doubt. He's going to be there for the long haul. I just don't see it happening next year because the transition, you're telling me he's just going to do what he wants pretty much. He's going to go into the game, and Doug Martin's going to be 100% healthy, and he's going to run the ball, and he's going to be able to read all these defenses and just make the right plays. And I don't see it happening. He didn't do it throughout his college career on a consistent basis. And now one training camp, an OTA, and a preseason, he's going to be ready for this bigger, stronger league that we always talk about is uncomparable to the college league. We scoff when we talk about Alabama playing an NFL team, but we're going to justify Jameis Winston transitioning from a multi-interception throwing quarterback to 8-9 games, and that interception is going to go down, and he's going to be the best because he's got, you know, 2 6-5 receivers and a hard-nosed running back. I just don't see it. I just don't see it.
Okay, this is why I say it. His best target last year was Rashawn Green, who had an awesome season and was put in that what was that, the Biletnikoff, if I'm not mistaken, the receiver award in college. So that had to show some credit on what he's doing at the quarterback position on lighting a stat board up for his wide receiver, let alone his tight end got credentials too in Nick O'Leary. And Nick O'Leary is also an NFL player right now too. So I get it. People are hung up on the interception total, but let's just do it like this. The guy was unbeaten running this table and made better decisions throwing the ball. I know you're hung up on that interception situation. I know you may hung up on this as being a better league, but it's not like, i.e., let's look at Tim Tebow. And Tim Tebow's situation while he was in college ranks, yeah, they won a whole bunch of games. They ran the table twice. But he was running. Like, he wasn't making throws. Like, once he had to prove that he had to make throws, everybody knew the jury was out on him if he could ever make a football team, and they're actually trying to squeeze him on the Eagles to see if this works out. I don't think this is a situation around James Winston. I understand that you're hung up on these two receivers, and maybe it'd be a jump ball here, jump ball there. Those are big targets. These guys have wrecked havoc. Okay, at least Vincent Jackson wrecked havoc at least once or twice in his career. And Evans, in his rookie season, I pray that it only gets better. If he gets worse from his rookie season, that's the question mark. But for him to be as strong and tall as he is right now, to make a difference down the field, and they have a guy at Tim Wright that knows what it takes to get to the postseason, and that is a quarterback safety blanket at the tight end position, I don't think you're going to see Jameis Winston sit up here and throw a bundle of interceptions. To be honest, like I said, a lot of his weapons left him, and now he has more weapons than he had in Florida State in his first season when they won a national championship. Like, let's be honest. I really feel like this guy has more in the bag than Cam Newton. I think Cam Newton is just a scrambler. Cam Newton has a big arm. He can make a big pass downfield. He's not accurate. And Cam Newton has made the playoffs twice. We're not the way we had Steve Smith in one season. And this season that just went past, we made the playoffs, they won 6 damn games. 6 games. And I'm not going to sit up here and say, like, oh, well, dude, here goes the NFC South. They're going to sit up here and have an under 500. I hope it's not like that. Because if that's the case, then just spread these guys out throughout the NFL and just make it happen. Because if that's the case. Right. Because I'm not going to sit up here and watch the team get into the playoffs with 6 wins again. I won't do it again. I won't. But the fact of the matter is he's done with less. He's done better with less on a bigger stage playing in Tallahassee with the Florida State Seminoles, and knowing that he's going to be in a system where he has to prove his point with a black coach, no less. There's no Jimbo Fisher eating all that Jameis is going to throw to him until they start losing to Oregon, and he tells him, hey, look, you can sit the bench basically in his last game right there. I think he's going to have that mutual understanding with Lovie, because I think Lovie won't sit there and take too much of that and make it happen. Like I said, he has weapons here, and I'm not pegging it more or less for being on Doug Martin being healthy. I'm saying if he is healthy, just like I said, it will be problems in the NFC South. I'm not saying that, I'm pegging him to get 16 games under his belt. No, I'm not saying that, because he has his question mark around him being healthy for the full season. I'm saying if he is there for at least 14 games or more, I feel like they could get 8 wins this season. And I'm actually looking at this schedule. It's not that bad at what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers face all season long. I mean, especially, like I said, I feel like they could split whether they go to teams' houses or not. I feel like they can split some of these games within the division and pick up 5 wins throughout the schedule. Let's look at the schedule. They play Tennessee at home. I feel that's winnable, especially with him going up against Marcus Mariota again. That's if Marcus more or less a starter, which I think is pegged to. I think they could actually sweep the series up against New Orleans. I'm not feeling that same situation, but the second game of the season, they go to the Superdome in New Orleans, and then they play Houston. I think that's a tough game. I think they can lose there. They also have Jacksonville. I think that's a winnable game as well. Let's see. Depending on what the Rams look like at the end of the season also, the Chicago Bears, if they have stepped up, I mean, they're dealing with injuries right now also. I think that's 4 teams right there that I just mentioned outside of the 3 that I feel that they could pick up within the division, and I still think that they could end up getting 2 from the Saints. I still think they could get 2 from the Saints. I really do. The Saints secondary has not been good in quite some time. So they're going to have to defend. Matter of fact, I think that was the game where Evans went off for 230-some-odd yards up against the Saints secondary with a lesser quarterback. So I feel like they have a tough game up against Philly. I feel like they got a tough game up against Dallas. A 50-50 game up against the Giants. It depends on if Odell Beckham and Cruz really have that magic of them two being a 1-2 punch for Eli. The Washington Redskins, I feel like that's a winnable game or a 50-50 game. This is a big season for the Tampa Bay Bucs to make a name moving forward. And like I said, they can be 8-8. Or better. Just looking at the schedule, I feel the Colts could be a problem. Depending on if the Rams are consistent like they were last season and giving people hell. I mean, they did knock off the Seahawks in one game, and I think they also beat the Saints, if I'm not mistaken. But I don't know if they continue this going. So I feel like there is 7 or 8 wins right here. I feel like they can get 8-8. I'm being hopeful for Jameis, and I don't feel comfortable in doing this. I don't. Okay, so that's one. Anything else that you want to hit on before we get away from this? I do have more.
No, not on this subject. We can go ahead.
Okay, so here goes my next topic. Like I said, football wise, and this actually hurts me because I like the guy. I like him a lot at the position he plays. But I told you I'd be touching on him up until this point, and I'm finally getting there. And it's Arian Foster, AKA awesomeness. I love all of the sayings and the notions that he comes across with while he's out there on the football field. I love when he sees daylight, they run for a while because he knows how to hit the hole, so on and so forth. But now, people, here we go again. Arian Foster is hurt again. He's hurt again. So now it's like you have an awesome running back approaching the start of the season. And what he's able to give this team, and I really hope he can give this team 100%, but you already lose the biggest weapon outside him in Isaiah Johnson. I'm sorry. If you could find another option on that offense bigger than him, maybe Hopkins, but I don't think Hopkins was a bigger deal comparable to Isaiah Johnson. I think that they're looking for Arian Foster to be big and dynamic to the quarterback that they have right now on this Houston Texans team. One, do you think he could be affected by week one? And two, do you think Arian Foster makes it through the duration of this NFL season?
Well, I'm checking something real quick to make sure I didn't reread it wrong. But if I'm not mistaken, I think they actually got Pierre Thomas as well, who passed the physical. I'm going to read and make sure that I didn't read that wrong or if that wasn't just a rumor. But on Arian Foster, you know, it is tough to see him go down with an injury. But like you said, again, it's just something we've come to expect from him. We knew he would be injured. I expected it to happen in the season. The thing is, with me, when he comes back from an injury, I don't see him really go down again until the next year. I don't know if that's just me or what is it, but I feel like he has one major injury, and then, you know, that's about it major-wise, and he has some dings here and there, and we'll hear something about a pool or you know, he'll twist something. But I think he'll be there when it's, you say week one. That's tough to call. I would say he's going to try, like, you know, the best PRs. You know, he's going to try his best to make it there by week one. But I think this is truly the case, and especially with a gentleman like this and a man like this, like you said, the wisdom he puts out there all the time, football or not, it's wisdom. So I think he's going to put his heart and soul into getting back for this team, because he knows, like you so eloquently put in the last topic, Jameis was that piece. A running back is a piece for Houston. They've got a defense that can do it. If they can get a stellar running back running 100%, 16 games, it'll lighten the load for whoever they're going to put at quarterback. And now they can do the things they need to do offensively, because like you said, with Johnson leaving and them just having Hopkins, they need someone else. So that's how it has to go. When you talk about Houston, they needed that running back. So I was unable to find the Pierre Thomas thing, but if it does, if that's what happened and that's true, and I didn't just read it wrong, you know, that's something that I would like to touch on a different note relating to another running back. But as it pertains to Arian Foster, I think he'll be there week one, and he'll put everything he has into it to get there.
Now, being Pierre Thomas, he's scheduled for a visit with the Houston Texans. Now, understand this, right? Pierre Thomas, when he was relevant, was on a Saints team where they passed heavy, and a lot of those defenses that played the Saints backed off the line of scrimmage, right? Now you have a situation where you got Hoyer and you got Mallett down there, both of which who have come from the New England Patriots situation, right? And now they're down there with O'Brien, too. So this makes it cute. It makes it cute. But they don't have those household names at the wide receiver position that I feel draws the respect for these defenses to back off the line of scrimmage. I still feel like they'll have seven in the box to watch these guys force the run issue, especially while the situation is looming around Arian Foster. So they go ahead. Go ahead and sign Pierre Thomas. I'm not sold on Pierre Thomas. I'm not. And this is a guy, and I hate to do it like this or sound like this, and people may feel like I'm wrong. This is a guy that I picked up in fantasy about 2 or 3 years ago. He is not a stat monster. He is not one of those guys that continually gets to the end zone or gets you 85 to 100-yard game. He is not that type of guy. They are used to a guy like Arian Foster who's a threat for 115 to 140 yards a game, and not saying that's his average, but he can get those numbers. He can get those numbers and get you two scores. They don't have him on the field. I feel like they struggle running the ball. They turn one-dimensional, start trying to pass their way out of troubles, and you're going to have to see this Houston Texans defense try and win games with these guys all season long, especially with quarterbacks that are so thirsty at trying to make a big splash for themselves, and Ryan Mallett and in Hoyer. And I was a big supporter of Hoyer last year with the Browns until Patton turned his back on him and went with Johnny Manziel. That's a whole other issue for a whole other. Well, no, this is the cook-off, so anything goes. But I felt like they disrespected Hoyer. So I feel like this is a fresh start for Hoyer. But right now, with Arian Foster nursing something, the question looms big, especially for this Houston Texans offense. Anything else before we get away from Arian Foster?
No, we can get away from the Arian Foster topic.
Okay, so now that we are in the thick of things of this football talk, people, and I know, we just got here, training camps have just started, it's summertime, and attitude is everything. That's right, attitude is everything. So somebody, i.e. one of these faces of the Dallas Cowboys, and you all know where I'm going, I might as well give you a hint, the X. If you don't know who the X is, that's Brian, number 88. They have a on-field matter happen with him and one of his teammates get into a scuffle on field and punches a drone, and Tyler hits him in the face. He hits him with a good left, and, you know, Dez didn't want to take exception to that, so he throws a punch and then basically hits him in the shoulder pad, the chest area, whatever. They said that they hugged, made up, so on and so forth. But already, people, there is something following or a story following Dez Bryant, especially after he just got his deal. Now, one, I think that he more or less needs to kind of just save that, I don't even want to call it tough guy banter because he is a monster, but I think he needs to save that for the field for other teams, not fight your teammates fresh out of the gate. And he said, oh, I don't want to have some punk or some weak dude on my team, so on and so forth. They were going at it before the incident happened. So it was only a matter of time that, you know, one of his teammates get under his skin, and while his helmet popped off, he popped off the other guy's helmet. That's when he got started throwing blows, so on and so forth. Your thoughts about Dez Bryant, especially with everybody watching him close, similarly to the way they followed Jerry Jones around, will he be able to prove doubters wrong and be successful for this Dallas Cowboy team? Or is this more or less if there's smoke, there's fire, and Dez will always have something going on in his NFL career?
Well, Dez will always have the camera on him, so Dez is always going to have something wrong with him. Everything he does is going to be critiqued, and the moment one person at any network anywhere feels that it is done in the wrong way and it's not the proper way to do it, it's going to be brought up as, you know, there goes Dez doing Dez again. This is probably the most non-story story I've heard all offseason. I mean, in the number of fights that have happened at multiple camps, I'm sure every player's fought once at camp so far. If not everyone, it's a very high number. They're not all recorded and they're not all under the public eye. Not everyone has, you know, thrown a fit and teared up and left the game a minute early against Green Bay because you're losing in a game that you were thoroughly winning. You know, no one's been, you know, upset and yelling at a teammate because of something else. Not all those players have done that, so they're not going to have the camera on them more often than not. The thing is, this really has nothing to do with it. I watched the video in its entirety. It looked like, you know, any other thing. They scuffled for a minute, and they stopped, and the corner couldn't let it go. He continued to yell whatever he continued to yell, and Dez let him know what was up. This is teammates being teammates and nothing more. Everyone's going to make a big deal about it because it's Dez Bryant. Well, Dez Bryant can't shut it off. He's on a football field. He doesn't know that, you know, that's a Dallas corner or if it's a New York Giant corner. He's going to play his hardest, and he's going to show these players how to put every heart and soul into everything at all times, and hopefully they can take that from him and better themselves as players, because we all know close to no one on the field shows as much emotion and heart as Dez Bryant does. So, you know, In a time where these guys have been off for so long, they're finally getting the pads on. They finally get to hit each other. Testosterone's at an all-time high. This thing is going to happen. Dez is probably going to get in another fight with another corner, and we're going to go at this again. If he's taking off helmets and he's throwing blows week two, week four, week five, you know, one of those weeks, he's taking off a helmet and he's throwing blows then during a game, then we've got a problem. But I don't foresee that happening. This is just, you know, him getting back into the rhythm of things, and I hate to say it, like Dez being Dez, but like I said, he can't turn off his heart. I don't think any of us could or would want to. So he's gonna go full tilt all the time. And like I said, hopefully these guys can learn how to play with all your heart and total emotion in every game. But I don't see too much of a big deal about it.
Well, no, this is why I say that. And not to say to turn off, you know, his you know, monster mentality, but he has to understand that he is now a role model for this team, for playmakers and guys on the defensive side of the ball that he's going to be going up against. because the defensive players are going to go at him as tough as they can, because he's the toughest receiver to defend. They're going to give him their 100%. They're not going to take any breaks on him. And the first day out of the bag, he's in a fight, and I think he more or less took offense to it because he ripped the guy's helmet off, and Tyler Carter went a shot. He hit him with a good left, like just for my boxing mentality. He hit him with a good left. He caught Dez good. That's why Dez wanted to fight him, because it was on camera, and everybody seen it. I don't know if everybody seen him, and I don't know if people seen the movie, and I hate this because it's a tasteless title, or at least I feel like it for Sports City Chef purposes. But there was a movie called The Great White Hype, and he punches Damon Wayans in the face, and Damon Wayans is like, you're going to embarrass me on TV. And that's exactly how I feel Dez approached that, more or less, instead of just, you know, watching your helmet fly off, going back and huddle, because you guys are going to go right back at it. You guys got a little heat, however it goes on. This guy may end up losing a roster spot because he basically got in the face of one of the faces of the Dallas Cowboys at this point in time. So I feel some type of way right now. It's fresh out of the gate, Dez. I feel like I guess you got to keep your head in that situation. I mean, anything happens, you're human, so on and so forth. But for him to be a youngster, that's a guy that you're probably going to have to tutor or get him ready for the season for what to be ready for. Big-time receivers that's just as strong as you. How do they learn from you? Because let's look at it like this. What if he's locking you up? You feel some type of way because he's doing his job. I'm not buying that. That's like, cut it out, man. Go out there and ball. Like especially the first game out the gate. First training camp out the gate. I said game. Like, these are the plays you're going to be going through. So every cornerback that chucks you in the chest or makes your helmet pop up, you're going to get into a fight and could get ejected. You can get ejected. Nobody's bigger than the law, especially the law in the NFL. I just feel some type of way about it. Anything else around Dez before we get away from him?
You know, I understand, you know, he's the mentor now, he's the veteran, but I think of all places, this is when you can lose your temperament. This is the place where you can go overboard slightly a little, because you can't get a flag, you can't impact, anything. And if anything, you're just going to throw one, and like they said, hugged it out, went back to practice. I think it just, to me, it shows a little bit of on the youngster side, wiliness. Like, I don't care, you're the X and you're the man here, I'm coming to play just as hard as you are. And I think, like you said, Dez may have took a little something to that, but test him. Sometimes I think, and this is this is probably not the common or common sense way of thinking, but if you want to test someone, sometimes you got to square up. I mean, and sometimes in certain situations like this, he wanted to see. Maybe he was locking him down. He wanted to see what would happen in a situation when a bigger guy was coming at him like that. And he's been in that situation before on the field, and maybe he wanted to see how he would react if a bigger receiver was doing that, and not so much Dez, but what the youngster would do. And maybe that was a learning point for him to be like, yo, if I were to do that, you know, do that in a game, I would be in trouble. You let it go. You learn from it, you know. And that's where I get it, and that's where I'm going with it. I think more or less Dez wasn't trying, and like you said, maybe he was locking him down. We don't know what was preceding the actual fight, how well he was locking him down, if he was, but you never know, and that's why I just think that if this is the time, this is the place to get it out. If there is that tension, if there is that, so you can get it out now. You don't want it to happen in the game. You don't want it to happen, you know, later down the road. You just get it out now, and we can. This is the time to. Like I said, there's no flags involved. There's no penalties involved. There's no onus on a game involved. You just get it over with, shake hands, hug it out, and get back to the huddle. So, like I said, I don't put too much onus on it just because I feel this is the time of year. This is that time when everything can get to the forefront, when everything can come out. And if that's how you feel about a certain person or a situation, you let it all out. And we all know Dez, and that's where he's going to go. That's why I don't think it should come as a surprise. And I understand he wanted to be that veteran, but I think this is the one place that he can let it out, and it could be a learning process for not only the youngster, but for Dez as well. Even though he is that veteran, we still know Dez has to learn a few things.
Okay, I'm just hoping that he could channel his energy and put Dallas back at the head of the NFC East, to say the least. I know that their hands are going to be full, especially watching the Giants and Philadelphia, that's for sure. And you can't really count out the Washington Redskins, especially after what DeSean Jackson said. DeSean Jackson said this season, nobody will be able to cover him. That is talk in itself. I don't know if we have room for that one. I kind of did want to get to the Jadeveon Clowney situation for the third season in a row, though. He was injured while being in college and injured last season, also missing a good amount of time as well. And now his father is facing attempted murder charges. And it's like always something around Jadeveon Clowney, especially if this is something that could hinder him throughout the season. Your thoughts from one of the notables on the Texans defense, since we already spoke about their offense. Now looking at Jadeveon Clowney with something again in the corner of his own.
You know, an injury, you can't foresee it. A family member doing an illegal act, obviously, unless you're with that person, you're not going to see it or foresee it coming. At full circle. So I don't, you know, put this on him totally, but I think obviously physically this isn't going to affect him. I think mentally this is something that'll be in his mind and the back of his head, but this will be something where we get to see the moxie of this kid if he's going to be able to put this in the back of his mind for Sundays, you know, and let the process do its process, let whatever happens with that situation happen, because there's really nothing. I don't know, you know, the contents of the case. I don't know what's going on, if he's a witness or he was there. I don't know anything like that. This is the first time hearing of it. But in any case, I don't see it being something that's going to be in his mind. I don't see him going to, you know, every court appearance and everything like that. And he's got a life to do, and he's got a job to do. He's got a life to live and a job to do of his own. I understand your family is your family, especially your father. You know, God knows what would happen. But you know, when your father goes through something, or your mother or your aunt or your uncle, you're there for them, and you're there for them as much as you can, but you can't put your whole life on hold for someone else. And that's what that's essentially what he would be doing if he just, you know, stops thinking about football and lets this consume his life. So I don't per se see him, you know, thinking about it or it affecting him on the field. I think we may see an attitude sometimes that obviously we won't understand. Is there, but who can understand that? Not very many people have been in the situation that he's in now. So obviously interviews and things like that, we may see a certain side of Jadeveon that we may not like because of whatever is going on with his father in that case. But I think on the field, in practice, as it pertains to the Houston Texans and Jadeveon Clowney, they should be okay. It's not an injury. He doesn't, you know, have to rehab. He's not going to miss time. He'll be able to be there and do what he has to do for the team, and I think he'll be able to persevere through this and be there for as much of his father as he can. But like I said, he can't put his entire life on hold, career life, for this. As much as, you know, we would want to, we just all couldn't be able to do that.
Well, I'm not saying to put his life or career on hold. I'm more or less saying that this is something that's in the back of his mind that has been sticking with him for the past three seasons, two in the pros and one in college. I mean, where I could really go is two in college, because he was injured in that season where he got big, where he knocked that dude's helmet off from Michigan. He was injured in that season also. So at least I could go as far back as four, but I'll say, facing state three, that this is an ongoing situation about the Jadeveon Clowney, some that, you know, we can't predict when an injury does happen or, you know, having stuff that happens in your life at the end of the day. But his father for attempt murder charges. This is big. This is huge. This isn't something that you could just wave your hand at and walk away from. I think this is something that he will be concerned about and seeing if his father could get away with this or however deep this case and charges go. But I think that there has to be a mentor around him or somebody that can keep his mind off it, i.e., Vince Wilfork or J.J. Watt, and saying, you know what, brother, we got a season in front of us, and we're in this with you, because they got to support him. There's no way that he could turn his back on his family, especially his father. And I know his father probably was one of his bigger advocates or one of the guys that supported him while he was at the University of South Carolina and also getting with the Houston Texans team. It's just a very awkward timing of a situation that it continually happens to Jadeveon Clowney. Anything else as we get away from Jadeveon?
No, nothing more on the Clowney situation. Just, you know, unfortunate situation that hopefully they can get through it and hopefully get solved by the beginning of the season, how, you know, speedy trial or what have you. But we'll see what happens. But I just don't see it being a big deal for the career of Jadeveon.
Okay, well, we are at the tail end of the show. There was a topic that I wanted to get to, but I was going to say for Chandler. It was about Dombrowski, the general manager of the Detroit Tigers. Now, interesting enough, Sports City, I have a feeling like they are listening to us all across the board. They fired him. And we just talked about the Tigers, me, you, and Chandler, in this doggone kitchen as of Sunday. We just talked about these dudes and talked about Dombrowski, and they fired him. Epic. Yeah, I wanted to save it for him. I'll save it for him on the roundtable on Friday because we got a lot of interesting stuff coming up. We are at the tail end of the show, but I can't believe that it went down just that fast and we just spoke about everything that was going on with the Detroit Tigers. Okay, Nacho, I need a plug, close out, anything that you like to promote as we shut the lid on the grill here at the cookout.
You know, at Nacho in the Box, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. There's a, like I said, last time I was on here, I think I said it on Saturday on the Food Fight, there's a cool little video, Double Knockout. It's still amazing to me. I watch it all the time. But Food Fight on Saturdays, back-to-back MVPs. Let's go Packers. Bleacher Report, Power Rankings, start of the preseason, training camp, whatever. I love it because they're number one, Green Bay Packers. So Bleacher Report, you got another viewer, you know, clicker or whatever, until you mark us down, then I'll stop. on that note, thank you, Ty, for letting me come in, voice my opinion. And like I said, I don't lace up my shoes for less than $300 million. But if Harden wants to take, you know, $200 million and run to Adidas, let him do his thing.
That is for sure. Like I said, man, not too much money on the table to wear sneakers, have bands, and wristbands, stuff like that. Man, sign me up. Sign me up. That is for sure. SportsCityChef.com. Check out the website. The interviews, the blogs, the chefs. I'll be back here Thursday. I've been told I need to get. They said we still got dishes to give y'all on the hardwood, so we got y'all on Thursday. I'll get back here. I got to get my stuff together. And also the roundtable will be back here Friday, Saturday. I think the Gridiron Chefs might be back in order, but we'll definitely be back here with the Food Fight. Y'all stay tuned. Check us out, Twitter, Facebook, Four City Stays Focused. We already got y'all. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know. What about I be caught in this? What about I be caught in this life? Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up. Wait until the sun goes down, we gon' make this bitch light up. Even when the sun goes down, I'ma make it go. Ow, hoes turning heads like owls. I'm the man of the owl. Triple entendre, don't even ask me how. Con Edison flaunts next to a high power. Y'all can miss me with the money talk. The smart money's on hold, fuck what the dummies talk. I don't do too much blogging. I just run the town, I don't do too much jogging. The summer's off, the winter too.
top down in the winter, that's what winners do. And to these niggas, I'm like Windows 7. You let them tell it, they swear, cause they invented you. And since no good deed go unpunished, I'm not as cool with niggas as I once was. I once was, cool as the funds was. Put these bright lights and turn me to a monster. Sorry, mama, I promise you what you gave me, but I wouldn't win insane had I remained the same me. Fuck me. This is true. All I got is this money.
Who would have thought I'd be caught in this life? Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up.